Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Legends Lounge. I'm Drew Withers, and with me today in the lounge, we have former Maine Central Institute and UConn Husky. Was a two-time All-Star with the Washington Wizards, as well as a champion with the Dallas Mavericks. He is a current assistant coach with the Miami Heat. We got Caron Butler in the lounge. Thank you for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, brother. How you doing?
Oh, of course. I'm doing well. First thing I like to ask everybody, tell me about your welcome to the NBA moment.
I had a few of those. But the one that stands out the most is playing against Glenn Robinson. I believe he was
Big Dog.
Yeah, Big Dog. I believe he was, like, you know, obviously later in his career. And we had played him in preseason, I recall. And, you know, guys, you know, the OGs don't really get up for games like that. You know, the preseason games, just, you know, they're trying to get their legs under them. They had long summers, you know, the story goes on.
Trying to shake the rust off.
Yeah, trying to shake the rust off and just, you know, get the cobwebs out. But long story short, I'm on the side. I'm, you know, getting all my stuff off. I mean, I'm going at them and, you know, I'm feeling real good about myself. And
are you letting them know? Like, you talking some trash?
No, I'm looking at him, though, okay, because he's someone who I not only just idolize, but just like someone that I really like padding my game after. Hmm. You know what I mean? We had the same body type and things like that. You know, I grew up, you know, just outside of Milwaukee. So he played for the Bucks. He was one of my favorite players. So I even committed to going to the University of Purdue prior to going to UConn because of him. Hmm. And I'm watching this game and I'm doing everything. I'm like, I'm mugging. I'm like, man, this dude ain't like that. Like, I'm the one.
And it's my time.
Everybody like, yeah, keep asking. I'll never forget our assistant coach at the time. He said, yo, fella, pump your brakes. Don't get too excited. Just preseason, but you're doing well. I love what you're doing. Like, man, he can't do nothing with me. Fast forward to about 3 weeks after that, we played them in real time, like this game time now. When the pop,
it's regular season, regular season.
And man, I mean, he scored like 17 in the first quarter, man. Like, it was just like he just redefined himself. But I was just like, man, it's just different. And he didn't say not one word.
I was gonna say, did he let you know about it, or he just kept it business?
He just operated like he always operates, man. And I was just like, man, it's like he not even looking at the rim. He just giving me a bump, creating airspace, and just getting to his package in his bag. And I was just like, wow, I can't really do nothing with him. He said, young fella, keep asking us again. I go to the side. He's like, look, young fella, he ain't got a lot of buckets on a lot of people. Don't feel like, you know,
don't hang your head
on yourself. So don't hang your head. It is what it is, man. That's what he does for a living. You're a professional scorer. You're a professional bucket getter. And I had to take that on the chin. But I learned the lesson about preseason basketball, and obviously when the popcorn get to popping, like, it's a huge difference.
Definitely. Okay, so when would you say you felt like you belonged in the NBA? Like, what was your moments like? Okay, maybe you took you a little bit to get your feet wet, or you're getting used to things. When did you say you felt you belong?
Probably my second year, because like my first year, everything was like a whirlwind. I was averaging like the most minutes. I think I still have the franchise record for the Heat history for most points by a rookie, but I didn't feel like I belonged, because like we wasn't playing winning basketball yet. And I was just like playing a lot of minutes, and I was just getting a lot of production. Pat Riley was just pushing me in that space. Right. But that second year, where I was able to be, find my place and be consistent and win games. And like, I think guys started like screaming out my tendencies. Like, you know, if you're open on the court and the ball go, and they're like, oh man, you got to get to him, or Man, don't let him get to the, 2 feet in the paint. He'll take off. Like, and I was just like, oh shit. Like, I'm like, they know who I am.
Like, yeah, like they scouting me. I'm doing well enough to where I'm on. Yeah, I'm on the scouting report.
I'm on that whiteboard. You know what I mean? Like, when, because it's only about 3 or 4 guys that you really talk about in a scouting. And now we're super detailed. We talk about everybody. You know, we give respect to every player. And now the talent is different, so you have to. But it's specialists in every category. Sometimes, you know, guys are amazing at getting into the paint. Some guys are knockdown shooters and shot makers, not just takers. Some guys are excellent second chance operators and getting opportunities off the glass, or transition point scores or whatever the case. It's like everybody thrive in a specific area. But back then it was just like, if you're one or two of those guys or three that's being talked about in the scouting report, it's like, all right, you're a big deal. And I knew, like, my name was being talked about, a player, like, hey man, don't let them get a rhythm. Or like, and you hear those small conversations on the court. These are before mics and stuff was out there. And I was just like, oh wow. I was like, all right, I've arrived. Like these dudes are preparing for me. Yeah, they like, and I got a double team. Like, that was crazy. My second year in the league, I was playing the Bulls, and I was like, I was going off, and I got a double team. I was like, oh yeah, they don't want to see me one-on-one now.
So right. I'm here
like
now.
Mind like start. All right, I'm here. I can make it here. I can make it.
Right. Okay, like go a little bit step. Take a couple steps back with our veterans. So like you mentioned, you grew up in Wisconsin, but you ended up at Maine Central Institute. How'd that come about?
Yeah, it's so crazy that, I got kicked out of all schools like in the state of Wisconsin because of, my run-ins with the law at an early age. Mm. And Racine Unified said I couldn't, continue my education there. Couldn't play sports or obviously continue the education. So I was trying to like just pursue different spaces and places where I can go. And I had a mentor by the name of Jamil Aguari, a Muslim brother that ran the community center, the George Bray Community Center, which I operate and provide for the kids in the community now. He was just like, we got to get you out of here and we got to find other resources. And the call to action is to, get you out the state and we just got to find you a home. And, me in my head, I was just like, the basketball thing was cool. Like I'm done with it. It is what it is. But he was just like, I really want you to pursue this, man. You got a shot. You got a shot.
So you're willing to walk away from it.
Yeah. I wasn't like seeing what he saw at the time. I was just like, it is what it is. We got so many dudes that came through here that did it to death on the basketball court and just, but he saw something different in me. He was just like, man, you got it. And they raised funds. The community center raised funds to pay for my first semester to go to Maine Central Institute. Yeah, the whole community got together, man. You're talking about a lot of taco plates, a whole bunch of things, man.
A lot of fish fries, a lot of bake sales.
Man, to get me out of the hood, man.
That's love, though.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. And I went out there and, Max Good, the legendary Max Good, just, embraced me with open arms and gave me opportunity to be on his winning team. And, we won a prep school title that first year. And it was just amazing.
What was that cultural shock? Like going from, like you said, outside of Wisconsin to now you dropped it in Maine Central.
So I'm going to tell you like this. When you look at our state in Wisconsin, I think we're probably about 9.5% black in our state. But it's even crazy. I think Maine is like 4%. And I think that
I think it's like the complete opposite.
Yeah, it's like even 4%. And when you look at our team, it was predominantly black. We had one Caucasian person on the team. So it's like the population of black people went up just because of our basketball team, what I mean? In the state of
y'all were the population. Like,
we were the population of black people. And it was crazy. That was a culture shock. And then, this academically, like the curriculum and how you prepare and how it was just like, you think you was just going there to play basketball and just fall back. But the curriculum was the most important thing because all of us needed to get our ACT, SAT scores. We had a rigorous schedule, like with our tutors. It was just around the clock, process of just, getting more and more formally educated and, you know, and addressing your weaknesses. And I think that the prep school experience, you know, being away from my home, you know, not having access to funds to fly back and forth all the way in Maine, staying with a host family for, you know, probably 6-7 months, that really just, you know, amplified my drive to like really go out and pursue all the things that I wanted to do in life.
And you mentioned after that, you said you almost ended up Purdue. Was it really just because Big Dog, like it was only because Big Dog Robinson?
Yeah. And they had a man by the name of Frank Kendricks. He was assistant coach. He was a brother. He followed me my whole career. Like even when I was like young and playing AAU, he was like, "Hey man, you know, stay with it." And I just remember our conversation. So like that connection with him and then him connecting me with Big Dog, which is my favorite player and somebody who I molded and modeled my game after. It was just like, I was like, all right, I'm going to Purdue. Like it's close.
It seemed like
crib.
A fit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not too close, but it's close enough. It's close to enough. The crib and all, yeah. All that. So, and then I end up just, you know, going to, on a visit to Connecticut and I was like, yo, this is it. Like this, like they're going to feature me in this capacity. And, you know, this is before, like wherever you go, your games can be seen on ESPN. Like Storrs, Connecticut is right next to the home of ESPN. So like all our games was on national television or was streamed in some
type of coverage,
national coverage. Yeah. So we were seen all the time.
I talked to, I guess one of your Husky brothers, Charlie Villanueva, not long ago. And he said he was all in on once he met Jim Calhoun. What was it about when you met Coach Calhoun? Like what sticks out? What were you like? I got to play for this guy.
I'm gonna tell you like this. It's probably one of the realest conversations we had when I talk about Calhoun. But if you can be bought, you can be sold. And Calhoun came to my house, and every other person, and I don't mean to be disrespectful or anything to any organization or any university, but everyone came in like pretty much just saying like looking at you as a product and like how can they purchase you or how they can, you know, use you. And Calhoun was the only one in my eyes and in my family eyes that came like as like, this is a partnership. You're joining our family. We're joining your family. Like this, this is bigger than just basketball for us.
Not like an object. You know? We're not trying to get this object here, use it and then pass it on.
Yeah. It was just like, y'all, we connected forever. And I mean, everything he said in that meeting, like he meant it, he was about it. And he's still about it till this day. And I'm just forever grateful for him because he could have easily, you know, reneged on his word or his promises on what he was going to be about. And my grandmother, she deep rooted from the South, worked in the cotton fields of Mississippi. You know, she eyeballing him, and she is like, after everything he spoke about, she's like, you going with him.
Okay.
She's like, that's where you're going. You're going with him, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So once grandmama knew, it's like she just knew.
Yeah, grandma was like, yo, you going with him. Like, no, nah, you ain't gotta wait for his commitment or whatever y'all do. Like
this is a done deal.
Him.
Yeah.
Y'all
go and get home.
It's done deal. You can make your announcement.
Okay, so you there at UConn 2 years. When did you know it was time to go pro?
You know, honestly, I was trying to leave after my first year. I played on a team with Damar Johnson in prep school, and he was the number one player in high school basketball. I was the number one prep player. And I was just like, you know, every time a NBA scout or something came to see him, they saw me. And I was looking at the draft board, and they had me at a second round or something like that. And
after your first year, after your freshman
after
year?
After my first year, yeah. Mm. No, actually, after my first year, they was like, it's possible I go second round in prep school. And I was like, man, I was thinking about coming out. And then after my first year, it was like late first round or something like that. And I went and had a meeting with Coach. And he was just like, look, I'm going to lay it all on the line. Here's all the projections. He printed them out. He was like, this got you this. This guy got you here. This guy who I trust, he has the best relationships. He's like the scout role, Wojnarowski, you know, that had like all the team.
All the information, guys, yeah.
Everything. And he was just like, they saying you're going late first, possibly, you know, second round. And I was just like, what should I do? And he gave me the best advice. He was like, we're going to provide, you know, whatever you need here. Basketball wise, I don't think you're ready. You're going to get featured more. You're going to get a guaranteed salary right out the gate next year. If you go first round and go in that lottery, which I know you will, and this is going to be your team and we're building around you. So that would just like trigger something because, you know, I wanted to test the waters, but I didn't want to, you know, go that route without some uncertainty. And I wanted his full support and blessing when I left. And I talked to Richard Hamilton and Ray Allen and guys like that. And they was like, definitely go back for another season. And I'm glad I made that choice. And I went back and, you know, the rest was history.
That's a different era now, just in terms of the, you know, the options that guys would come or have coming out of high school. So say you were coming out of high school right now. Like, again, of course, there's still the college route, but also we've got, you know, you can go G League or Overtime Elite if you want to play professionally and make some money. You can go to college, get you some name, image, and likeness money. Overseas is now more of an option. What do you think would have appealed to you?
Yeah, I, you know, my one of my coaches now, two of my coaches actually, and one of my brothers, Kevin Ollie, who runs Overtime, and then obviously Coach Dave Lato, who was at DePaul, who recruited me as well from University of Connecticut, is with Overtime. I probably would have went that route. You know what I mean? Just knowing that, you know, I wanted to, you know, get paid for my likeness, obviously. And after I get put on game about that and just be able to play against the top tier guys and, you know, prepare myself to the best of my ability playing against the top tier talents, getting ready for the next level. But I think it's like a fit thing. You got to find out like what's the things that you need most importantly. Is it, you know, stability? Is it like professional habits? Like, do you have to grow in that capacity? Do you have to grow with your strength? Do you have to grow with, you know, obviously your playmaking in your game? Is that going to get better by playing more games, or is that going to get developed better by, you know, being in the college atmosphere in a setting? Or it's just like, what do you really want? But it's great to have so many options now. Before, a lot of guys just fell by the wayside because it was only that option to go to college. And sometimes people couldn't qualify. And if you couldn't qualify, it was like, all right, you couldn't pass the test or whatever the case may be. Now you're just stuck, you know, back in the hood or going to a community college. So it's just like, it was crazy back then. But now I love that there's so many options and also that you get actually get paid off your likeness. I think that's pretty dope.
Definitely. So what do you remember about like the draft process? Because you said, you know, you heard after your first year at UConn, you know, late first, early second. So you come back, have the better year, like, you know, all conference, all that. What do you remember about the draft process? Then, like once you had decided, okay, I'm ready. What do you remember about the draft process?
Well, after my last game, everyone's telling me that, you know, I was for sure a lottery pick. So I was just like, okay, that, like, what does that mean? And I sat down with the coach after I had my press conference, you know, declaring that I was going to the NBA. I was like, okay, what do I do from a representation standpoint? He was like, all right, I know a guy. And then I don't want you to go with my guy, but I'm going to introduce you to someone I know. And then these are other names that I know that's really, really good at their jobs. And, you know, these are people you should look into. And then you and your family make the decision. I'll be by your side. You can bounce whatever questions are.
So it's more to present you with the options.
Yeah, this gave me a ton of options. Not just one option or two options.
Gave he wasn't trying to force his guy on you.
Absolutely.
Right.
That was the process for me. And I sat down with all of them face to face. And I had a immediate connection with my brother, Raymond Brothers, who is the president of Rock Nation, been my only agent my entire career, basketball and coaching agent. And, yeah, we just connected right out the gate. And we just started talking about where I was going to work out, you know, placement, you know, getting me to Los Angeles, or did I want to be in Chicago? I told him I want to be as far away from home as possible so I can just like dial into my craft. Right. Then I was doing two-a-day workouts. They hired me a skills guy to just, you know, work me out twice a day, who's now on the bench as an assistant coach with the Los Angeles Clippers. And I was just working on my craft, playing against pros every day. That's when I met, you know, my brother, God rest his soul, Kobe Bryant. You know, I had Deshaun Stevenson. I had Jason Terry. You know, all those guys, you know, around the clock coming in the gym, working out against me and just making me better. And, you know, all the way up leading to that point. And then the process came where, you know, you had to – now it's more like a showcase where, like, teams will come out and see you in, like, your comfort areas. You know what I mean? Like, you get to run like your draft combine. You know what I mean? Like, they come out and watch you, like, all right, go over there.
It's your stadium. It's your –
You shoot all the shots that you're comfortable with, everything. You run around. But, you know, back then it was like, man, every team, like I worked out for nine teams, the top nine teams in the draft, and Miami had the 10th pick, and that's where I ended up going. And I didn't even work out for the Heat. You know what I mean? So I went to everywhere but the Heat, but every team that I went to, and I got like three commitments from teams that told me, hey, don't work out for nobody else. We're taking you. And obviously those were, you know, all lies, but the Miami Heat took the chance on me, and, you know, I'm glad they did.
I was going to say, did you know going in, but I guess not if they had not worked you out. But at that point, like when you're hearing, you know, the team promises, what are you like? Are you believing it? Like, what else would you think? Right. It's your first time in the draft. Like, where was your mind process it?
And I've been lied to before. So it was just like, it's like when my agent was like, hey, you going to Memphis? I was like, a word, and Memphis picked. And I was like, you know, me in my head, you know, we all come with ego and, a little edge, but I was just like, I'm better than him. And the next guy get called Denver. I'm like, I'm better than him. Cleveland. I would destroy him. Like, what? You know, just like in your head, you're just like, man, like
what is it?
Yeah. Before me, like, what? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, I'm looking at my agent, I'm looking at Raymond. Like, man, if I don't get drafted, man, I'm telling you, it's going to be like, man, like, y'all got me on TV.
Problems.
Yeah, I'm looking at him like, man, the TV just pointing at the camera, just staring at me like this right
in
here.
In the green room.
My direction. Yeah. Now, it was actually like in the center of everything. And my mom and everybody got dressed up. I said, man, we ain't spent money we ain't even had, really. Like, you know, we ain't got fresh to death. You know what I'm saying? I was like, man, if I don't get drafted, it's over. And then he got a phone call, you know, pulled out his flip phone. He go in the side, and Pat Riley was like, hey, you know, we taking him, next pick. And he was like, hey, you going to Miami? I'm like, for real? He's like, yeah. And they're like,
I was going to say, I heard this one before. Did you believe it, or you had to hear the name?
No, I had to hear that. I had to hear that. You know, it was just, I was like, nah, I ain't rolling. This still feel fishy, you know what I'm saying? Because I ain't got three, four promises already, y'all.
Right, I heard this before. Face.
I ain't heard all the promises already. I need to see it. That's why I always got the phrase, man, seeing is believing. So they actually called my name, and it was just like a real moment, man. I broke down in tears. I fell in the arms of, you know, my mother and my agent, my fiance at the time, my wife for 21 years, Andrea was there. And it was just like, it was a dope moment because I knew what it took to get to that place. You know what I mean? And, you know, it still give me chills to this day, even thinking about it. And, you know, shout out to all the kids that's going to experience that moment this season. Hmm.
Now, you went from Racine, Wisconsin, up to Maine, to Storrs, Connecticut. Now you're in South Beach. You were 21, 22?
Yeah.
22, dropped in, man. South. What was that like? What was that like?
It was a whirlwind. But I'm going to tell you this. It's not what people think. Like,
really,
a lot of people think that, you know, this, when I got here, I'm just telling you from my observation and my lens, when I got here, South Beach was South Beach, but I never got a chance to experience South Beach. And I'll tell you why, because the Godfather just wasn't having it. You know, Pat Riley knew just about everyone in Miami, just period. Like, he knew everybody.
He had eyes everywhere.
Yeah, so if you had the tendencies of being out or whatever, he knew. And, you know, back then, you know, your off the court life was just as more important than your on court life. So they kind of still dictated all that stuff. You know, now you got so much freedom, you know, more than an athlete, you know, the life, all the narratives goes on. Like, you can do what you want. Right. You know, you got all these rules and regulations protecting you. But back then, nah, man.
It's a different game.
It was play basketball, nothing else. Go get off your feet and get ready to play hard. It was 2-a-days. It was no restrictions. It was no, you know, no mental health days. It was no labor day. It was nothing. It was just hoop and be glad that you got this job and this opportunity. And so for me, I never wanted to mess up, you know, something that, you know, obviously I was blessed with. I was fortunate to be able to do. So I just wasn't playing that game. I wasn't playing with my career. And whatever the regulations was, he put the rules. He you know, it was super militant at the time. Mm. And he said, this is what we're doing. This is how we operate. I don't want to hear this. And that's what it was. So I've probably been down to South Beach 5 times in my career, my first 2 years that I'd never been down there. I just stayed away from it and focused on hoop.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people, I feel like we've seen, you know, if a guy gets drafted to a city like Miami at that age, put some money in his pocket the first time, it might not end that well. But it seems like for you, that might have been like, because like you said, far away from home, and just that the structure that Pat Riley had set up seemed kind of tailor-made for you.
Well, I tell you what, with the culture we have down here and with, you know, some of the legends that we had, like Bob McAdoo and Keith Askins and obviously Stan Van Gundy. And then now, you know, my brother and, you know, mentor and the head coach of the Miami Heat, you know, Eric Spoelstra, like he was, you know, all these people was just pouring into me, you know, still coaching me till this day, everyone that I mentioned. And obviously the godfather of the game, you know, Pat Riley, Randy Fun, you know, Andy Ellsberg, you know, Rob Wilson, Tim Donovan. Like, it's just people that become a fabric of your life and try to prepare you for, you know, what's next. And, you know, these people are the same people that follow me to every organization that I went to after I was traded, you know, still stands extremely connected. And this is at a time where being connected with people was hard, you know, we're going to the Lakers. Right. It's like now I'm with the opposition. I'm an op. And they still like reaching out, connecting, making sure that I'm good.
Right. So, and it wasn't like the Twitter, Instagram, that way to do it. Like, if you're putting in some effort to talk to somebody, you had to put in some effort.
Writing letters, like handwritten letters. Like, you know, Pat Riley checking in on the blue cards, writing handwritten letters, just making sure that I'm good and giving me inspirational, you know, messages. You know, so he was still coaching me. He's still coaching me to this day. So it was pretty dope, man. This was the best place for me to land. Now that I look back at it, like, if I would have went, you know, 4-3, whatever, my career, my life probably wouldn't have panned out the same because I got exactly what I need. The medicine that I needed, I got it, you know, when I arrived with the Miami Heat. Mm.
Now, you mentioned something like the, you know, the Riley, the Van Gundy. Those are some of the names we know now. Like on that, was it, I think 03, 04, the second year, y'all had some characters on that team. It was rookie D Wade. I think rookie Udonis Haslem.
Yeah, Udonis Haslem.
Ray Skip to my Lou, Ray for Austin, Lamar. Oh, like what the
Eddie Jones, Brian Grant.
When you think of those guys, all these years late, like what comes to mind? You smiling thinking of them, but what comes to mind?
Man, it was funny as hell, man. It was always, it was never a dull moment in practice. And I think that it, amongst the organization, it's probably two teams they talk about all the time. Obviously, the Big Three. And that dynamic and, you know, the Heatles and everything that happened in that era. But our team is like, and we didn't win a championship, but we had one of the best turnaround stories in franchise history where we started off, I think, like 7-21 or something. And then we just like ran through the East the second half of the season and made the playoffs and ended up getting bounced out in the semifinals. But our team was just like full of joy and life. And every day, you know, we had a team full of hoopers, you know, like that was true basketball heads, like dudes that just love
the game
basketball. Yeah. And that's rare because sometimes people, you know, are profession, like they're perfectionists in like what they do, but you know, they don't they're not drawn to basketball. They're drawn to other things, and that's not their, right. their first love. Might not even be their second, but they do it because they're really good at it. Right. But our team, that team that it was assembled, that everyone first love was basketball. So all we did is talk basketball. All we do was compete in practice, and it was just like, I think it really was a pleasure and a joy for, you know, Stan to coach us and just have so many guys that bought into the concepts and everything that he was, everything he was about.
Yeah, had that, again, like you mentioned, made the second round or mid semifinals, but then you get traded. Like, what leading up to getting traded? Like, did you know anything? How did you find out? Because again, like, you said, like you had the second year, things were going well. When did you find out that it might be an option?
I think I was coming back from Antigua and doing the clinic for a basketball camp for the Miami Heat, and I get back, walking through the airport and on the stroller, you see ESPN was on like every channel in the airport. You know, that was just a thing back then. You always had on the sports stuff. Now it's more CNN and Fox and stuff like that. But we had ESPN on every stroller, and you see the stroller going across, and it's like Shaquille O'Neal coming to Miami. It's not like he might come. It's not now. It's to the point where he's coming.
Right.
And it's like, who's in the deal? And I called Pat Riley. I was just like, hey, I'm getting traded. He's like, no, you know, anything happened. I was like, I just bought a house. He was like, well, you know, you bought a house, you know, obviously a great investment, you know.
Right.
You know, this, you know, the rundown, the, you know, the PC talk, you know, politically correct talk. And I hit D Wade up. I was like, bro, what you hear? And he was like, man, you know, they ain't tell me nothing yet or nothing, you know. And obviously I was like, I know he's the franchise guy, or going to be the franchise guy going forward. So I was wondering, and hit Lamar up, like, what you hearing? He's like, man, we going. I was like, wow. Where we going? He was like, we're going to LA, man. Like, me, you. He's like, I'm trying to see who else going. And yeah, I got the news. I was like, damn. I was like,
so you found out through Lamar Odom.
Yeah, like he told me, hey, it's me, you, and somebody. Like, but he was just like speculating too. It wasn't nothing like definitive or anything. But probably about a couple hours after I got from the airport, that's when I found out.
Was that kind of hard? Was that a tough thing to square up, right? Because again, like you said, you asked Pat Riley, and you know business is business. But at the same time, if you ask somebody that.
Yeah, it was a tough pill to swallow. Just because, you know, I like everything I do is just like I'm so personally connected to it. So it was like really personal to be like here and have the success that we had. And but they, you know, they was going for a championship, first one in franchise history. And, you know, that's business, you know, and they saw opportunity to, you know, really do something special. And it worked out. You know, it worked out for them. It worked out for us. You know, I was able to, you know, go to Los Angeles, you know, play on that big stage, you know, improve my brand and, you know, get with someone, you know, all the things that I was being taught here, I was actually able to see it firsthand in Kobe Bryant. So it like ended up working out perfectly, you know, in my career for me, you know, but I was like devastated because as a young person, you think when you get drafted somewhere and Miami is always my first home. Like I was just like, I'm never leaving here. Like I'm getting my roots. I'm setting my roots here. Like this, I'm gonna grow everything, build everything here. And then I got traded. Mm-hmm. I was just like devastated.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Won't hold you too much longer. We appreciate your time. Did want to ask you, you know, you mentioned with the Heat things you get involved in, you put like a personal level or a personal touch, personal connection with it. What type of work are you doing? You said, is it the George Bradley Community Center?
Yeah, the George Bray Community Center.
Bray, I'm sorry. Could you tell me more about that?
Yeah, we have the Fatherhood Crusade where, you know, we get a group of black and brown fathers in the community to come out and, you know, have that connection, you know, with their children. We also have the Bridge Program with people that have had like a setback with, you know, mass incarceration and they're able to come and, you know, step back into society and have a home where they can, you know, have resources, you know, access to computers and kitchen or anything you want to do. And, you know, so many programs under that roof where we just kind of amplify and help them because it's no bridge for them. You know, once they get released, they just back into society, and we want to help with the rehabilitation process. We also we sponsor the Juneteenth Day. We've been a proud sponsor of that for over 16 years. And obviously it's celebrating our history in the community and in the world, and told through our lens and our and our narratives,
which is important.
That's something that's huge. That's huge for us to hear that. And also we just, we do a lot of community function events. We partner up with Cops and Kids where we give books to the communities. We give bicycles to the communities. We have so many programs under the roof that I can't even now, so I had to put them all right here to the side and read them off. But it's a lot of programs and a lot.
That's a good thing. Yeah,
yeah, it's a lot of programs and initiatives that's coming out our Brace Center.
For sure, for sure. Well, I know we're thankful. The community of Miami is thankful. What the? I guess what's next? I guess I should ask for Coach Caron Butler.
Yeah, you know, for me, just continue to polish and sharpen some things that I need to get better at. And you know, this has really been like the best experience for me though. Learning players, looking at it from a different lens, the X and O's, learning that process, learning everyone's why and why they're different and how you can connect with your players. And just empowering them. You know, I think that's very important, you know, as an owner and as a business person. It's very important to empower, you know, your employees and people that work for you and people that's under you to let them know that, you know, they can rise up and do just about anything. I think that's very important. And what I'm seeing now as a coach, as an assistant coach in this business, is so important to do those things. It's also, it's a selfless act. You know what I mean? You have to be really bought in to be the most selfless person. Because you're not going to get credit for things. You're not going to, be highlighted, and nor should you want to. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, coaching is a selfless act. You know, giving without being applauded is, you know, something that I've been all about my entire life and my career. And I'm just happy that I'm able to be under the tutelage of, you know, two of the top 15 greatest coaches ever, you know, Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra. So, you know, it's coach all the way, man.
For sure. For sure. Coach Tough Juice, thank you so much for stopping by the lounge, man.
Yeah, appreciate you, brother.
Of course. You got an open seat. Come back anytime.
Yeah, will do.
Salute. Right, yes, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother.
Right. Thank you, everybody, for stopping by. The Legends Lounge is brought to you by the National Basketball Retired Players Association. Give us a follow on Twitter at NBA Legends Lounge, and be sure to subscribe and rate the Legends Lounge podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll catch you next time.